begins with Vayehi Miketz Nasayim Yamim, the end of 2 years. And the Midrashim tell us that Yosef was in prison an extra 2 years because he told the Sar HaMashkim to remember him to Paro. He said to the Sar HaMashkim, Ki im zechartani v'his kartani. So the obvious question is, what was wrong with that? A person is supposed to make hishtablus. Yosef's in prison, and there's no natural way for him to get out, so he has a chance now to have somebody who's getting out who can say something good about him and get about it there. Why shouldn't he say it? So the answers that are given are, that's very good for a regular person, but Yosef was on a higher madrega and he already saw miracles being done for him, so he should not have made that hishtablus. Or Yosef made too much hishtablus. He said, Zichartani, the Hiskartani al Paro, remember me. Could have said just that and leave it up to the Sar HaMashkim what to do. But he said, Zichartani, remember me, and remember me to Paro. That was too much hishtablus, so he was punished. But why was he punished for 2 years? He only said one word extra, not two. So they say that since the second one already showed that he had too much hishtablus, even the first one wasn't good. Even the first one wasn't the proper hishtablus. Once you show that you don't have the proper bitachon, then even the little hishtablus wasn't good. Okay, all this the Mefarshim say. But I have a much more serious question. Two more serious questions. First of all, whatever Yosef did, and if the reason is because he said two words, zichartani v'zichartani, why did he have 2 years? Why not 2 months? Why not 2 weeks? 2 days? If the main thing is there was 2 lashonos of hishtablus that weren't proper, why 2 years? Secondly, if Yosef's sin was that he should not have asked the Sar HaMashkim, he should have relied on the Rabbanu Shel Olam and not asked the Sar HaMashkim to get him out, then it would seem to me that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to teach him a lesson, then the way he got out of prison should have been totally removed from the Sar HaMashkim completely. The Sar HaMashkim should have died, and Yosef should have gotten out in the most unexpected way, nothing to do with the Sar HaMashkim. That would have taught him a lesson. I don't need your help. But in the end, how did Yosef get out of prison? Because the Sar HaMashkim remembered him to Paro, exactly as he thought. So if God wants to teach him a lesson, I don't need your help, this is not the great way to teach him a lesson. Because in the end, he got out exactly as he thought that the Sar HaMashkim told Paro, because he told the Sar HaMashkim. Why would God let him come out like that if he wanted to punish him and teach him a lesson not to make this kind of hishtablus? So I'll tell you what I think, and it answers all the questions. There is a Gemara that says that a person can remember something to act upon it for a year. After that, he files it away in his mind, and it's not fresh in his mind. It's not something that he'll act upon. That's why we remember Amalek every year, once every 12 months. Because after that, even though we wouldn't forget Amalek, but it wouldn't be in the forefront of our minds to act upon it, that's called forgetting. So the Chassam Sofer says, something to do with this year in fact, no, it's not really Nogay anymore, but it was Nogay after this year. He says that in a leap year, you should try to be mechaven to be Yotzei Zechiras Amalek in Parshas Kisavo, in Parshas Kiseitze, where it's mentioned, because there's going to be more than 12 months between the last Parsha Zohar. There's going to be 13 months. So you already forgot it when the 13th month came in. Forgetting doesn't mean total forgetting, it means putting it in the back of your mind. You need to remember something for 12 months you can remember. After that, not. Okay, so now let's see what happened with Yosef. What's the concept of hishtablus? Right? You make your hishtablus, and that causes the result? No. The Michtam Eliyahu has a long explanation that we never cause an effect in this world. What we do is put in a prerequisite. We fulfill a condition. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, U'beirachticha b'chol asher ta'aseh. I'll give you a bracha in everything that you do, but you have to do. But ultimately, it's God who causes the effect. You do not make a living. You don't even earn a living. You put in your hishtadlus, and the Rabbanu Shalom gives you a living. And that should be obvious, because no matter what you do, you can't guarantee that you're going to have a living. People can do all the right things, and they don't make a living. They have degrees, and they have whatever it may be, and they're scrounging around in garbage cans looking for a living. People in Russia who there learned and got degrees of very, very lucrative positions, and then they had to leave Russia, and they came to countries where those positions were flooded, and they wouldn't take people from outside of America, and they're doing cleaning in other people's offices. And that's how they're making their living. So you can do all the right things and not make a living. And you can do all the wrong things and be a millionaire. Two examples. About 20 years ago in America, there was a craze called pet rocks. They were selling plain, ordinary rock in a box that looked like a cage with one little page of instructions how to take care of this pet rock. Didn't need to be fed, didn't need to be walked, didn't need water, right? Just keep it in the box, whatever, don't let a sledgehammer come over it. These were the directions. Now, nobody in their right mind would have invested in this great idea of selling rocks in a box for $10. Because who in the world is going to spend $10 on a plain, ordinary rock which you can go outside and get a whole zoo from for free? On your own. Put it in your own box. But Americans are Americans, and the person became a millionaire overnight. Became a fad. And everybody bought up pet rocks. Or another example, Cabbage Patch Dolls. Cabbage Patch Dolls were dolls that a mother couldn't love. They were the ugliest dolls you could imagine. Even though I know some children who talk to look like that. Who would have thought that anyone is going to buy an ugly doll for their children? But again, millions of Americans bought them, and the person became a millionaire overnight. So hishtadlus is not a guarantee that you're going to have the effect. It's only a condition. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring the effect, he will. If he doesn't, he won't. But the hishtadlus is an important condition. It's a prerequisite. So it's not cause and effect. Yosef, and therefore you have to do hishtadlus, but you never think that you're the one who's doing the cause. Yosef's problem was that by saying zichartani, so he fulfilled the condition of hishtadlus. Remember me. Period. But by saying v'hizkartani al paro, remember me to paro, Yosef appeared to be orchestrating what was going to be. It's not just that I'm fulfilling a condition. I'm the one who's making the effect. Because I'm telling you to remember me, that's fulfilling a condition. But I'm telling you what to do with remembering me, then it seems like I'm the one orchestrating what's going on. That was Yosef's faith. In a small way, he intimated that he was the cause. It's hishtadlus is not just a condition, it's a cause. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show him that's not the case. With all your hishtadlus in the world, I'm the one who makes the effect, not you. And I'll prove it to you, he said. According to nature, how long could the Tzar HaMashkin have remembered Yosef to act upon it? 12 months. If at the last day of the 12 months, he told Paro about it, how long could Paro remember it to act upon it? Another 12 months. That means, once 2 years came, naturally, what Yosef did could have no power. Because 2 years passed by. And the Rabbanu Shalom said, now I'm going to show you that even though it can't be coming from you, I'm going to make it work out exactly as you thought. But you didn't have to cause it. I caused it. And now the Tzar HaMashkin will go to Paro and he'll tell him exactly as you thought, but you didn't orchestrate it because it happened 2 years later. It couldn't be from you. It has to be from me. That was the punishment. That's why Dafka 2 years, and Dafka had happened through the Tzar HaMashkin, but to teach Yosef that Hishtadlus is not a cause, it's only a prerequisite condition. Okay. Any questions on that? We'll go to something else. Okay. Next thing. This is not the pshat in the pasuk, but it's a cute word that I thought of many years ago, and I have a yetzer hara to tell it over to you, so I'm going to tell it over to you. When Yosef first encounters his brothers, so it says, Vayar Yosef es echa vayakirein. Yosef saw his brothers and he recognized them. Vayisnakir aleihem. The Targum says, and he thought to himself, what can I say to them? What can I say to them? Okay? That's what vayisnakir means. The Pashup Shan Vaishnakar is that he disguised himself. He hid himself from them. He made himself look like somebody else. Sound like somebody else. Vaishnakar. But the Targum says what? Vaishnakar Vav Yud Tov Nun Chafresh. Nochri. He made himself like a stranger to them. But the Targum says Vaishnakar Alehem. He thought to himself, what should I say to them? Vayigaber itom kashos, and he spoke harsh words to them. Vayomer, and he said to them, Me'ayin basam, where'd you come from? Vayomu, and they said, Me'eretz Kanan lishpar ochel, and they said, we came from Kanan to buy food. And then the next pasuk says, Vayakir Yosef es echov, Yosef recognized his brothers, Behem lo hikiru, and they didn't recognize him. Okay, now let's see what the problem is. Problem is that too many things in this pasuk don't make sense. Says Yosef recognized his brothers. So why do you have to tell me the second time that Yosef recognized his brothers? I already said he recognized them. Vayar Yosef Esecha Vayakirein. Then afterwards it says Vayakir Yosef Esecha. So some of Farshim say the first time he recognized them in general that they're his brothers. But it was a long time since he saw them. He didn't recognize each one individually. The second time it says it, he already recognized each individual one. That's what some Rishonim say. Let's tell you a different pshat in a second, but just to get the pshat in the pasuk. Next problem with the pasuk is, by Yisnakir Alein, he thought, what am I going to say to them? Okay? So, how long did it take him to think, what am I going to say to them, when the next thing he said was, where'd you come from? And that was a real deep thing that you really needed to think about what to say, right? That obviously was the first thing to say to them, where are you from? So what was this deep thing that he thought, what can I say to them? Secondly, the Torah describes what he said to them was Vayidaber itom kashos. He spoke to them harsh words. Where's the harsh words? What, he yelled at them? Where are you from? That was harsh. The words weren't harsh. Later on, it became harsh. You know when he started to speak harsh words? When he said, Meraklim atem, you are spies. Those were harsh words. But where are you from? That's not harsh words. So why does the Torah describe that Yosef had to think deeply what he should say to them? He came up with this great thing of where are you from, and that was called talking to them harsh words. So what I think maybe is the following. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Histakel b'shlosha dvorim v'i atoboli de'avir. If you constantly consider three things, you won't come to do avirus. Da me'ayin basa, know where you came from. Ula'an atoholech, and where you're going. You came from a tipa srucha, so how could you be a balkina? How could you, what's it called, be jealous of other people? The three main sources of sin are kina, taiva, and kavod. Jealousy, lust, and honor. So if you consider these three things, you won't come to those three things. If you consider where'd you come from, you came from nothing. How could you be jealous of other people? Appreciate what you have. You had nothing, now you're something. So just because you don't have what somebody else has, why should you be jealous? Appreciate what you have. You came from nothing. And where are you going? You're going to a place of worms. How could you be about taiva? The more you eat, the more you are nehenna from olam hazeh, it's all going to end up as worms in the grave. So how could you be a person of lust? And how could you be about gaiva when in the future you're going to have to stand with name Melech Malchei Amlach Makadosh Baruch Hu, right, and give an accounting? How could you be about gaiva when you know that in the future you're going to have to stand before God? How could you ever be haughty? You know how low you're going to feel when you stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam. So may Ayin Basa, where'd you come from, counteracts jealousy. La'ana Taholeich counteracts Taiva. And Lifnei Mia Ta'asid Litain Din V'cheshbon counteracts Gaiva. Covered.
What does the last one mean?
What?
What does the last one mean?
Who are you going to stand before and have to give an accounting of everything you did in this world? You have to stand before God. How could you be a Balgaiva when in some future time you're going to have to stand you in front of God? How could you feel that you're a big shot? Now, Yosef sees his brothers and he recognizes them. And he thinks they recognize him. And he thinks deeply, what mussar can I tell them? I haven't seen them in 22 years. The last time I saw them, they were selling me. Why did they sell him? What was the root that the Torah says led them to all the mistakes they made in judging him wrongly, in accusing him or suspecting him of being a rodef, all the high things of what's it called, of they thought that they were 100% justified in getting rid of this guy who was a danger to them, physically and spiritually, but what was at the root of their distortion of how they judged him? Torah says, Vayikanu bo'echa. They were jealous of him. On their level, these are great people, but there was a little bit of jealousy, and kina distorts your vision. So all the things that they saw and thought that they were seeing truth and coming to truthful conclusions were all distorted because of their kina. So the sin that they were guilty of was kina. That's what the root of their sin was. How do you go against kina? Remember where you came from. So Yosef thought deeply and he said to them, Me'ayin Basan, where'd you come from? He didn't mean where'd you come from now. He meant to tell them the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. Where did you come from? You came from nothing. How could you be jealous of me? How could you be jealous and lead yourself to sell me because of jealousy when you should have remembered Me'ayin Basan? However, the brothers didn't know who he was. And when they heard him say, where'd you come from? They heard an Egyptian saying to them, where'd you come from? So what did they answer? Me'eretz Canaan, Lishparofo. We happen to come from the land of Canaan to buy food. At that point, Yosef recognized that his brothers didn't recognize him. Because they wouldn't have answered in the Eretz Canaan, Lishbar Ochel, they would have realized he was saying a mission in Pirkei Avos, Me'ayin Basan, and giving them Mussar. And they answered him, simple question, where did you come from? We came from Canaan to buy food. So at that point, Vayakir Yosef Esechav, Yosef recognized that his brothers didn't recognize him. Behem Lo'ikiru. That's what the Pasuk means. So the Me'ayin Basan of Yosef is not Stam, where did you come from? It was Mussar that he thought of deeply. What's the first thing I can tell them? They were guilty of the sin of Kina. And I want to give them Mussar to counteract that. The best Mussar is, Dam Me'ayin Basan, know where you came from. And that counteracts Kina. They, on the other hand, heard a simple, innocent question because they didn't know who he was. And at that point, Yosef recognized that his brothers didn't recognize him. Okay. Any questions on that? Go to the next thing. Yeah. Those are harsh words. If he meant, may I emboss him, why didn't you remember where you came from? How could you possibly have jealousy and lead yourself to sell me? Right? Such a terrible sin. Why didn't you remember where you came from? That's Mussar. That's harsh words. But if it was just, hey, where'd you guys come from? That's not harsh words. Okay, one more general thing. And that is, why, after 22 years of not seeing his brothers, Yosef chose to do what he did to them. And not just say, okay, let bygones be bygones, and nice, I missed you guys a lot, and, you know, you sold me into slavery, but really everything worked out for the good, and HaKadosh Baruch, like I said, like the end. Don't think I mean you any harm. HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant it for the good, you meant it for the bad, and I forgive you, and I don't mean you any harm. Why didn't you say that right away in the beginning? Why did he put them through this terrible thing? Put his father through this terrible thing? And another question they ask, why didn't he tell his father where he was once he got out of prison? Or even before that, when he was already in Mitzrayim, in the beginning, before he got into prison, why didn't he send his father a telegram? Why did he send him a messenger? I'm back. I'm Yosef. I'm okay. Don't worry. I'm in Mitzrayim. Everything's okay. So the Rishonim say various ideas, and they're all true. First of all, the Medrash says that Yosef, in fact, wanted to tell his brothers who he was, and that he forgives them, and no hard feelings, because God made it work out for the good. A malach came and forced him to do what he did. It was against his will. And you can see a little bit that's the way it was, because all the time Yosef is the one who's turning around and crying, really, it's killing him, what's going on? It's killing you so much, so tell him who you are. Likewise, that it was against his will, either because he was forcing himself, or something was forcing him. Whatever it was, it wasn't willing, because otherwise, every time he turned around and really lost himself and he cried, why don't you just stop her in? There must have been some reason why he felt compelled to do what he did. So the Mepharshim say a few different ideas. One idea is that Yosef had these prophetic dreams, and he held they were prophecy. And a Navi has an inyan to make his prophecy come true. It's part of the prophecy. If you have a prophecy, then it's as if there's a mandate to see it through. And therefore, Yosef had to see to it that all of his brothers would come and bow down to him, because that was in the dream, including Binyamin, and including his father and stepmother. So therefore, there was no way that he could reveal himself to them and have them come down and bow to him, especially Yaakov. So therefore, he had to do what he did in order, what's it called, to fulfill the dreams. That's one derech in the Rishonim. Another derech in the Rishonim was that Yosef was afraid that if he told his father where he was, he would cause more harm to his father than good. Now his father would know he's not dead, he's alive, he's in Mitzrayim, but the brothers, upon hearing that Yosef contacted the father and he's alive, would run away out of fright for fear that now Yosef would take revenge on them, and he'd tell his father what they did, and his father would curse them, and that would be the end of Klal Yisrael. So Yosef said, yeah, I can tell my father where I am, but I can't control the situation to know that my brothers aren't going to run away. My father's not going to curse my brothers and destroy the whole Jewish people. So he wanted to make sure that before he revealed who he was and where he was, that he could control the situation and make sure that nobody would be afraid of him in the future. How did that happen? Yosef put them in a situation where he could have killed them legally. He framed them, said they were spies, made them go back and get Binyamin, framed Binyamin that he's a thief, and through all of this he could have at any point put them up for trial and have them killed. And he didn't. At the point when he could have hurt them the most, that's when he revealed himself to them. So the brothers knew from this whole ordeal that he meant them no harm. Because if he did, he had the opportunity to do it legally and get rid of them legally. They were spies, thieves, who were all liable to a death penalty. And yet he didn't take advantage of that. So the brothers now knew that he meant them no harm. So now if he'd reveal himself to his father or whatever, they didn't have a fear that he's going to tell the father what they did, and the father's going to curse them, and they wouldn't run away, and Klal Yisrael would be maintained. So he waited to be able to be in control of the situation and know that nothing worse is going to happen to Yaakov than knowing that he's missing. If he knew where he was and the brothers got wind of it and got scared, Yaakov could be worse off than he was now. Yeah.
After Yosef and Yaakov united, what did Yaakov think had happened over
there? So there are many different Mepharshim. Some Mepharshim say that Yosef basically avoided speaking to his father at all for fear that they'll discuss where he was and what happened to him. And he just didn't tell him. And Yaakov felt that if the Rebbe Shlom didn't tell me, and my son's not telling me, there's a good reason why I shouldn't know, and he wasn't so curious, which is a big mile. Of all the milers I've ever thought about the avos, that's the biggest one. He wasn't curious to say, hey, what happened? Right? God didn't tell me. Yosef doesn't want to tell me. It's not for me to know. That's a tremendous mile. That's what some say. Some say that Yaakov did know. But Yosef explained to him, and Yaakov understood what motivated the brothers, and therefore everything was fine. There are two different shittas in Rishon. Another pshat. And that is, Yosef wanted to give the brothers a chance to be mechaper on their sin. And in order to have kapara, you need tshuvas hamishko. Tshuvas hamishko means, in addition to doing tshuva, to regretting, accepting you won't do it again, you have to somehow compensate for the pleasure you got out of the sin, or what you benefited from the sin. In other words, a person ate something treif, so tshuva samishkal is, in addition to doing tshuva, fast. So you compensate for the eating that you did, now you're fasting to negate that. Right? You stole something in benefit of somebody's money, give something up that you have where you lose that some similar amount of money. That's called tshuva samishkal. What? Tshuva samishkal. Mem shin kuflam shikila. It's to balance it out. Tshuva, balancing out the tshuva. So basically, what Yosef did is he put them through the same thing that they put him. Think about it. He took them, and in the beginning, he accused them of something that they weren't guilty of, which they accused him. They accused him of being a rodent, and he wasn't. They accused them of being spies. He took them and threw them into a bar. What did they do to him? They threw him into a bar. So they experienced the same thing that he experienced. Okay? Then they made them go back and bring their brother, okay, and have to beg and plead for the brother. Where they could have, he wanted to see if they do the same thing again. And abandon the brother to save their own skin. But here they did the opposite, which leads us to the next. So all these things, he put them through what they put him, so he could compensate for the sin. Along with the tshuva they did, they'll be able to compensate. In addition, he wanted them, yeah.
Wouldn't that become like the mechaper?
Yes, 100%.
What's the difference
between the nekama, the Gemara says, is a very positive thing. If you don't do it for selfish purpose, personal reasons. Nekama, what is nekama? Kel nekama Hashem. We say in Hanukkah time, right? Nakamta es nikmasam. What's nekama? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Nekama is wherever evil benefits in the world. So you need to take nekama, revenge, to show that evil doesn't pay. Otherwise it leaves a mark on the world, an impression on the world that evil pays off. So the nekama is to show that evil does not pay off. That in the end, the books are righted. There's a better word for that. Izun cheshbonot in Hebrew. What does that mean in English? You make. There's a word for it in English. But I can't think of it right now. What?
Like after all the righteous,
right, so he showed that they got back what they supposedly gained from this sin, so now the everything is equal again. But there's more to it. That's the following. Real tshuva, this is another aspect. They're all true. All these things were included, and each different part had a different purpose. Real tshuva, the Rambam says, how do you know if you really did tshuva? Okay, you ate a non-kosher steak at a non-kosher restaurant, and how do you know if you really did tshuva? So the Rambam says that if you come to the same situation that you were in when you did the sin, and you don't do it, then you know you did tshuva. Then you're about tshuva. Then your tshuva is real. So if you were real hungry that day, and you just were passing by the restaurant, you got a whiff of the aroma, and you broke down, and you ran in and ordered something not kosher, And the same thing happens, not when you have a stomach ache, not when you just ate a big meal, but you're just as hungry as you were when you did the sin, and you pass by the same place with the same ease of doing the sin. Not that you had to go by bus across city to do it, so you decided it wasn't worth the bother. You were passing by and the same aroma came out. Not a different food, the same food that you love. Exactly the same situation that you were in when you sinned, and now you resisted it, you know you're about to. So Yosef wanted to test to make sure that they realized that they wouldn't do this again. That this sin, they recognized that they did a sin. So part of what he did was to make them recognize that they sinned. And it did, that worked. Because by doing to them, neither connected neither what they did to him, they said, hey, we're being punished, neither connected neither. So they realized they must have sinned. And that was the discussion, the Torah says. First they said, well, maybe we didn't sin, maybe we just should have been more merciful. But what we did was right. But we didn't do it with enough mercy. And Reuven told them, no, Lemaisa, we're getting the same thing we did to him. Must be that we sinned, the thing was wrong. Also, he showed them how you could sin, how you could make a mistake, how he could misunderstand all the circumstantial evidence and accuse them of being spies, then they could misunderstand the circumstantial evidence and accuse them of being eroded. Maybe they made a mistake, just like they're making a mistake against them. And therefore, what he did was put them in the same situation again. Now they have a brother who they can suspect stole and put them in danger. What do you do to a brother who puts you in danger? Get rid of him. So they should have abandoned Binyamin. But they didn't. They stood up for him. So he put them, first he did everything to them to let them know they sinned. So they recognize the fact that they sinned and see that they're being punished neither connected neither. And then, once they recognize they sin, he put them in the same situation again to see if they do it again. And when they didn't, he knew their tshuva was complete. Now he could tell his father, now there's no problem. Once they did tshuva, so the father should father it against them. He did tshuva, and it's a strong tshuva that remained. So now he could tell his father, no more word. That's according to the opinions who say that the father knew in the end. Yaakov knew that they sold him. But it was all after their tshuva, so what's there to do? They did tshuva already. That's nothing. The person does tshuva, you don't remind him of his past deeds. So that fits in with that idea. Any questions on this? You must have heard this before. I mean, parts of it at least. These are the Rabbans and Sfornos and the, right, it's really a chalent of a lot of different Mefarshim, but basically this is the idea of Yosef's Nekama. Otherwise it doesn't make sense. Why would Yosef put his father and his brothers through this terrible thing? You know, let bygones be bygones, or if you really hold it against them, kill them, whatever. But this answers basically all these things are true, and he had all of these things in mind. Okay, let me tell you something about Hanukkah. We can't go through the whole 2-hour drasha, but I'll tell you some acute thing about Hanukkah, the kernel of Hanukkah. It will make the opposite of the miracle of Hanukkah. Instead of taking something small and making it big, we'll take something big and make it small. We'll condense it into a few minutes. The main lesson of Hanukkah is Yavan represented the externals of the world. They only believed in external wisdom. They worshipped external beauty, the external might, power, sports, the body. Their gods were human beings, supermen and superwomen. They took the spiritual and turned it into physical. They made their gods into physical beings. They created their gods in their own image, instead of them being created in God's image. That's what the Greek gods were, a bunch of thugs that fought with each other, stole each other's wives, did terrible things. But that's all mythology. But they were super people. But they were people. Basically, just an external view of the world. And I think that the word Yavan hints to that. Yavan is three letters, Yud, Vav, and Nun, that have no inside. They're only lines. There's no inside to them. So they represent total external physicality. Also, when you look at the world in a totally physical external way, then you measure the world by quantity. When you look at the world from a spiritual standpoint, you measure it by quality, not by quantity. Spirituality is quality. Physicality is quantity. There are three generic quantities in this world when you deal with the physical world. What are they? Small, medium, large. That's yava. Three lines that have no inside that represent total externals in three sizes. Small yud, medium-sized vav, large nun. That's this hint to the world. And those three lines are parallel. They never intersect. Because a physical world without spirituality, everything is disjointed, everything is separate. Nothing is together. It's all physically separated. The only thing that unites things is spirituality. So those three lines are parallel, they come in three sizes of quantity, and they have no insight. That's Yavan. And Yavan is the opposite of the word Noi. Noi means beauty. Nun Vav Yud. If you turn Noi around, you get Yavan. And somebody pointed out to me just a few days ago that when you turn Yavan backwards and make it Noi, then the Nun does have an insight. There's an insight. Real beauty is a reflection of the inner beauty. Yavan made beauty just external, just the externals. So by them, there's no insight. But by real Noi, there's an insight. There's an insight to that Nun. It's in the right angle. The Nun has an insight to it. So Yavan represented total external wisdom, external beauty, and they wanted everyone to have that same kind of lifestyle. And therefore they wanted to extract from Yiddishkeit any internal values. And that's why by Yavan we don't speak about destruction. They didn't want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They could have. Could have burned it down. They were in charge of it. But they didn't want to destroy. By Yavan we find two words. L'tamei u'lechalel. They wanted to defile and desecrate. Now let me tell you what those words mean. L'chalel, to desecrate, means to take the inner value out of something. Prove it to you. The word chalal has many meanings. One meaning is outer space. The vacuum of empty space is called the chalal because it's empty space. There's no inside. A dead body is called a chalal because he has no neshama. He's dead. Just has a body. The external. There's nothing inside. A flute is called a chalil because it's hollow inside. In fact, I'm sure that the etymology of the word hollow in English is chalal. That's why it has two L's. H-O-L-L is chalal in Hebrew. It means hollow. They wanted to hollow out Yiddishkeit. They wanted to take the neshama out of it and leave just the facade. And that they said they could live with because then it's the same as the lifestyle of the Greeks. So they, and Tuma is wherever there was Kedusha, and the Kedusha went away and the vacuum is left, it attracts Tuma, or the vacuum is Tuma. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to be Mechalel and Metameh. Take out the inner spiritual value and leave just the outer facade. And that's why they attacked three mitzvahs specifically, Shabbos, Mila, and Rosh Chodesh. There are three dimensions to the world. The world, the individual, and time. Those are the three dimensions of the world. Olam, the world, Shana means time, and Nefesh, person. Bris Mila is the neshama of the person. It represents that there's a connection to God in the body. The body is not all there is. The body envelops a Tzelem Elokim, which is a neshama. So Bris Mila represents the neshama of the body. Shabbos represents the neshama of the world. The world is created in 6 days, that's the physical world. Shabbos adds, Me'ein Olam Haba, it adds a spiritual dimension to the world. And Rosh Chodesh represents the neshama of time. Your Mekadesh time. Time is a external thing, and you can introduce Kedusha into time by making Rosh Chodesh. That's where Kedusha comes into time. So the Yavanim wanted to say that the only thing important in this world was the external physical might. And yet we have the internal spiritual. So what is the nace of Hanukkah? That the ikkar in this world is not the externals, it's the internal kedusha. It's not the external physicality. There doesn't have to be a conflict between them. They can get along as partners, the body and the soul. But when there is a conflict, the soul wins over the body. The ruchnius wins over the gashmius. How do I know that? That was the miracle of Hanukkah. First of all, it says in the Alanisim, Giborim biad chaloshim, Rabim biad miatim, Tmeim biad tahorim, Rishoyim biad tzadikim, Zaydim biad oskei sorasecha. So the Mefarshim asked, I understand that the first two things are a miracle. If the few and the weak win over the many and the strong, that's a miracle. But that the tzadikim went over the Rishoyim, the Tahorim went over the Tzmeim, is that a miracle? Is there some unwritten natural law that tzadikim always lose and pure people always lose? And if they win, then it's a miracle. What's the miracle there? I was thinking, that's not what it means. What it means is the following. We were weak and few. But we didn't win because we were weak and few. We won despite the fact that we were weak and few. So why did we win? Because we were pure and righteous and learned Torah. We had the spiritual edge. They had the physical edge. They were many and strong. But they were defiled, and they were Rishoyim, and they were Zaydim. So we had the we had the spiritual edge. They had the physical edge. When it came into conflict, which one won? The spiritual went over the physical. And that's the miracle of the oil, too. It doesn't make a difference how much you have. It's not quantity. You can have a little bit, but if it's pure and holy, it'll last. And that's the lesson of the menorah. The menorah lesson of the menorah is lo bechayil, the lo bekoach, ki im baruchi, omar Hashem. That's what the Rabban Hashem told Zechariah Hanavi when he showed him the menorah. It represents that it's not numbers and it's not strength, but it's ruchnius that makes the difference. And that is exactly what Hanukkah teaches us. And that's why the word Hagadol appears four times in the Alanisim of Hanukkah, not once in the Alanisim of Purim. Because Hanukkah comes to tell me what is Gadol. Gadol Yefes, Yavan, is called Gadol. They're big, strong, mighty, numerous, physical bigness. But we have a different kind of Gadol. We have the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was the fattest, tallest Kohen they could find, and they made him the Kohen Gadol? Of course not. It had nothing to do with quantity. It had to do with spiritual quality. That's Kohen Gadol. So our concept of Gadol is very different than their concept. But what is the real concept of Gadol? What we have. That's what Hanukkah teaches us. What is really Gadol? It's not external physicality that's Gadol. It's quality, spiritual quality that makes it Gadol. Memela, when we sing Mal Suor by the candles, that's what we're saying. All these nations that we're mentioning, the empires of Mitzrayim and Babel and Madai and Paras, all of them had everything physical going for them, which we didn't have. But what we had going for us, that spiritual power was greater than them, because they're not singing about us and any candles. We're singing about them. Where are they? They're in the history books. We're still around. So obviously what we have is much more potent than what they had. They had all the physical things going for them, and they're no longer around. What did we have? These candles. The Or Hashem. We didn't have any of those physical things, and we're still around. So obviously what we have is more potent and more significant than what they have. And I was thinking also one last thing, that the food that you will be eating plenty of in the next few days in here in Eretz Israel is different than what was in Chutz Laretz. In Chutz Laretz, we all were accustomed to eating latkes. That is the food of Hanukkah, because it's boiled in oil, and it's like eating oil, and oil is the nace, and that's what latkes are all about. But here, when I first came to Eretz Israel, it was a shock. There was no latkes, there was only jelly donuts. It was like, you know, what in the world jelly donuts have to do with Hanukkah? But that's, you know, that's what Eretz Israel is, jelly donuts. So pardon me, okay, so donuts you make fried in oil. But you make any donuts. Why dafka jelly donuts? But that's exactly the lesson of Hanukkah. What does a jelly donut teach me? It's not the ikkar what's on the outside. The ikkar is what's on the inside. That is the lesson of Hanukkah in a nutshell. Or in a jelly donut. Okay.